Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm going back to where the beach is near. The beer is dear. There's plenty of women out of the crowd. Walking
around the final seconds, the whistle is gone, and Smoker Rover is out of the champion.
By the river's side, can match the tide as it flows.
Well, I'm being told that Average Joe's does not have enough players and will be forfeiting the championship match.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Gary Bright and drives it clean out over the fence. Out in there, he's a Cotton. Jesus, he's a Cotton.
Hi, you're welcome to the Sligo Way podcast. I'm Ross O'Boyle, your Northwest Rugby correspondent, and I'm delighted today to bring to you Mr. Shawnee Henry. So, Banada, Attracta, Sligo, UL Bowes, Munster, Connacht. Shawnee, it's been a bit of a journey there in the rugby careers.
Yeah, but, for sure. It's a lot of change throughout it all, but it's all been great. Some good steps along the way, you know.
Yeah, Shawnee, and so it's great to see you now, by the way. It's been a few years. We're getting old, aren't we?
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah, it's actually been way too long, Ross, you know what I mean? But I've been keeping an eye on things from a distance, but it's certainly great to connect now, and it's been far too long, you know?
Yeah, good man. And Shawnee, Boston, I believe, is where you're dialing in from over in the States.
Yeah, I moved over here kind of probably full-time almost straight after my career ended, and I've been here on and off with visas ever since. So yeah, it's been good. It's been one of these things. It was I kind of always wanted to make when I retired from the game. I always said I'd move away from it kind of completely. I didn't really have much interest in coaching or doing anything like that, so the idea of kind of starting fully, you know, fresh in a new place and where rugby really isn't a thing at all was kind of invigorating, like, or kind of, you know, a nice start to your career. So
I'd say we could probably do another podcast on just the last fortnight in the United States alone. it's been a crazy couple of weeks. We might go into a little bit of rugby, Shawnee, and jump back to where it all started. So just to bring everybody up to speed, Shawnee, so Banada Abbey was where you went to secondary school, and I believe Banada Abbey became St. Attracta's in your second year or second or third year, was it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I think we just finished the junior cert, I believe, when we merged with Tobacurry Secondary School, and we all moved into the brand new school in St. Attracta's. And really before that was kind of where rugby started for me. We had like a couple of games when we were in Banada. I think we played maybe two games against, like, I can't even remember, truth be told. But when we moved into St. Attracta's, we got a bit more structure. Obviously, we had a bigger pool to choose from as well, because two schools becoming one. Yeah. And we started, Gene McConnell was solely responsible for it, and Tom Gilligan. They were the ones that really got it going. And I think it was at 15 we started playing. It was me, it was Stephen Connolly, Dave Kilcoyne, a few good stalwarts there. We got you know, David Kelly, some amazing athletes. I think that was the one thing that stood out to me, if I remember from those times, is that how bad of an athlete I was in comparison to some of those guys.
Jean is massively involved still with the club. She's the vice president this year in PRO, and she's done Trojan work. I know she's very proud of getting into the game, and delighted with, and she talked fondly of the memories of yourself in the school. And I suppose one of the big highlights would have been the Connacht Junior Development Cup. Yeah. And I think to this day, that's the only bit of rugby silver we're in the school. Captain by yourself, what are the memories of that campaign?
Yeah, it was good. I think two things stood out to me. I think we played the Grammar. I think we played Ross Butler's Grammar side beforehand in the main competition, and we lost not by very much. I want to say it was 7-9 or something like that down in the Grammar.
Tied, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Gary Kern had a couple of kicks, and I remember Simon was playing, and there was a couple other people, and I just remember my disdain for Ross Butler at the time because he seemed to have the world at his fingertips, and he just seemed to be game seemed to be so easy for him. He since became one of my, you know, a very good friend of mine, but at the time I just remember trying my level best to get him, but I didn't in the end. But so we ran you guys close that day, and that was a shame we didn't get it over the line. But that really set us up then in the development competition, and I think we played as a core to the final in Galwegians. Yeah, and we managed to bring it over the lines.
But I remember, Shawnee, when the likes of yourselves and Kilcoyne and Conley and Rowan Leonard and Damien Cawley and big Chess Gorman, Colin Gorman, when all of you boys come out to Sligo Rugby Club, and it was just brilliant. Like, you know, you just brought that kind of that rugged farmer strength, and you all looked about 10 years. You all looked about 10 years older than us as well.
And weather out there, or whatever it is. But I remember the first time coming out to Sligo, and I remember Brendan Leahy pulling up in like a blue Volvo, and I just remember thinking, "What in the name of God have I got myself in for here?"
David and I remember you when you first got to the training. It was like a clown car. It was all these big massive men coming out of a tiny car.
Yeah.
It was the poor car. The poor car was struggling going over that mountain back and forth, back out to Banada and Tubbercurry.
Yeah, I remember shortly afterwards. Then we used to get the bus. There was a bus that used to come out that the club ran. It used to come up and collect us. We were at the top, and then it'd come down, do Tubbercurry, it'd do Ballymote, we'd collect Tansy and Peter Rafferty, and it was actually just like, it was just such a collection of personalities in that bus that it was never a dull day. But we'd end up getting home at like maybe 11 o'clock on like a Wednesday or Thursday night. But it was brilliant. But I remember my first 2 weeks. You were at the time. You were the guy. Like you were the main guy down there. And
Christ, has been a sharp deterioration over the years.
Shut up. Roy Cooper was there, and I remember hating it for the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, just going, "What am I in for here? No interest." I remember Adam Finus stood on me a couple of times, and then I was like, "All right, enough of this." So we did a tackling drill, and I think I got him a decent shot. And then after that, I kind of started to feel my way through it, but. Yeah, I think that was the next step in it, right? Where we started to get involved with the club and just a great, again, like just as a rugby club, like Sligo has just always had such amazing people in it. I think when you, at the time, you don't probably realize it because it was just all you know, right?
But, yeah.
You know, I was lucky I went on to another great club in UL Bowes, but even still, like the people in Sligo are second to none. Like the Joe Walshes, the Brendan Leahys, like Gene, all these great people that like, you know, without them, you know, around at the time, God only knows where we'd all
and
be.
It's good to say, like, a lot of those names are still coaching. Joe Walsh is still coaching the underage. Gene is highly involved. You know, Brendan Leahy now will be more used to the bar stool than he would be on the training pitch at the moment in the club. But he's still there to give you a nice bit of criticism, constructive after your matches, and give you an old punch in the stomach after games when he sees you. But there's a good community there, and just to kind of, you know, it was brilliant getting you boys to come out to the club those years, and we had such friendships, great friendships to this day still. And back to the under-18s, we obviously had quite a little bit of success in those years as well. Really, you boys were the cornerstone of that team as well, coming through. And, you know, it was a mix of a great couple of years, and it was great characters and personalities in that squad. And
yeah, for sure. It was actually, you know, it's funny, you look back on it and like, when you think about my career, like, you know, obviously, was lucky to play. I didn't have 100 tests, you know, cap career around them, but got a few games at the professional level or whatever. But those years down there and some of my early years in UL Bowes, like, they're some of the most enjoyable of my whole career. And I mean that because you didn't have it, didn't have the pressures of the contracts, or you didn't have the pressures of injuries, or you didn't have any of that stress. You were just playing it because you had a great couple of coaches, you had great friends around you, and it was just a joy. And I really liked the style of rugby we played. You know, we played that super physical, you know, confrontational style, and it suited the people we had involved at the time.
Yeah.
and we had, you know, the spark from Ross or Simon or whoever the case may be. I think Cahill was coming through then. As well. So it was, that was honestly some of the best days and nights, truth be told, of my rugby career.
I remember, I was just trying to go down the memory lane to see what times. I remember we went over to Newcastle for a trip with the Connacht schools. And it was a good trip. Now, I think you were a bit under the weather for a pool recovery session the next morning at one stage.
For sure, yeah, for sure. That was the start of it. Again, being that little bit younger, I was trying to probably keep up, and I definitely didn't do a good job.
Oh, look, there's great memories. And so talk me through UL. That would have been a nice change. You know, obviously you said the culture was similar in Sligo and the spirit of some degree. But just tell us a little bit more about the UL days and some of the fellas that were on your team back then.
Yeah, I think we were lucky. I came in with a class that was just at that time the UL Bowes Academy. We probably didn't realize it, but it was such a really high functioning academy. Like that guy Mike Juice, and then Ian Costler took over it as well, who now is with Wasps, I believe.
Yeah.
We probably didn't realize how good the standard of training was, but it was awesome. So we would train before college in the morning at 6:30. We'd do weights, and then we'd have a pitch session or a skill session most afternoons. So, you know, you were training twice a day pretty much all the time. And we loved it because we were just there with our friends. We were living on campus. Probably wasn't the traditional college experience compared to some people, but loved it. And we would stay back for our, you know, Christmas holidays or our, you know, our summers. We would still spend down there. And then out of that, like, just so many professionals came out of it. You know, there was myself, there was Kyle Sheridan, there was Dave Ficoin, Tommy O'Donnell, Dave Foley, I'm probably forgetting it.
Was JJ Hanrahan, is he there?
JJ Hanrahan was another one. There was so many.
And what division of the AAL were you playing then? Or did you win any titles or cups there? Or?
That's probably one of the bad things is that we never really made hay with it. We would have been Division 1 at the time. We were trying to, I think probably the inconsistency of us being released was definitely something like, some to be, you know, all of us. Some days it'd be none of us. Some days it'd be two of us. And so you're kind of jumping in and out of when, you know, you were selected or not, the case may be. So, but it's a great club. It really is a great club. It's still very, very friendly with so many people down there. And it definitely, that was the springboard, no question about it, that really kicked me on a level. You know what I mean? Yeah. In terms of physically my development, getting fitter and getting stronger and really understanding it, you know.
And when did the opportunity come about for the to go into the Munster Academy?
It kind of was always when we won our first All-Ireland, I think, with the under-20s with UL Bowes. We had a strong team that year, and a good few of us got taken in at that time. There was myself, Patrick O'Regan, Dave Ficoin, there was a lot of us, Kieran Essex, Tommy, we all kind of got brought in after that, I think. You know, it was kind of a good, successful team, or at least even into the sub-academy. I think I spent a year in the sub-academy, if not two, and then into the full academy. And then once you're in the academy, it's just a case of, you know, I think I was in my last year of college, and I said, look, you know, I've nothing to lose here. Let's absolutely go ham for it. And I managed to snag my first contract. I think after there was about four hookers were injured at one point, I got on the bench against Glasgow and managed to do okay. And then after that, I got my development contract that year. So
good man. And who was there? Was Jerry Flannery would have been there? What was the competition like when you were breaking in?
Yeah, it was huge. It was massive. And it was probably something, to be honest with you, I probably underestimated a little bit in my first couple of years of my career. I probably didn't pay enough attention to it in that, like, I think it was the year they had nine Lions, you know, that year where Munster had just spate of talent and Lions and they were doing great. So you had all the stalwart names, you know, at hooker it was Jerry Flannery and Damien Barley and Mike Sherry and myself were there, and we were kind of etching it out. And I think, looking back on it, it's probably something I didn't adjust to very well, is that, like, going from, you know, Sligo and where we were and where we grew up in the game to down there and trying to then realize that now these guys are just your teammates and they're not something you've looked at on TV. And I think that's probably something I built into making it bigger than it was and didn't really just probably throw that all to one side and just, you know, plow my own fur a little bit. Certainly did not make that mistake then as I got older in my career. But at the start, I think that was definitely something, looking back as a washed up retiree in Boston, I think about it.
You could be worse places to be. And talk us through, like, obviously, Shawnee, there's a good few injuries over the careers and whatnot. But kind of, was there any moments or any injury in particular you look back that was kind of like the start of any injuries or what was the thoughts on that?
And I always took, like, let's be honest, Ross, I wasn't very good. I was a terrible athlete, and I was, you know, not by any means, you know, the most naturally gifted individual. So in order for me...
I'm going to pause you on that one there. I got feedback. One of the things to say to BJ Botha, a South African prop, he once referred to you as a fellow who had a Mercedes engines in a Cosworth body.
I know exactly who told you that, but anyway,
I had to actually Google what a Cosworth was myself now, and it's a Ford Escort.
not the most sleek looking machine you'll ever see.
The Mercedes engine is fairly good though, in fairness. And then, so obviously with the Connacht opportunity came, like, I mean, that was obviously a bit of a dream coming back to the club, your home province. And I suppose, would it be fair to say that's where you felt you found your best form and kind of started to really break out?
Yeah, well, I went away that off-season, you know, looking back my time in Munster and kind of, you know, trying to take all the great things I learned off all the great players down there. And I love my time in Munster. Nothing but good things to say about it. But as I said, I probably didn't, in some ways, have enough of an edge about me, or I kind of lost my way a little bit towards the end of it. So I was so determined by the time I came to Connacht that I wasn't going to make that mistake. And truth be told, from a coaching point of view, it was probably a bit of a nightmare in certain aspects, because I just had, you know, I was like, look, this is my last chance at this thing.
Yeah.
I really want to do everything I had. And it had started to pay off. You know, I went up there in really good shape and it was paying dividends, you know. I loved it up there. It was a good time. Like, Pat had just came.
Was involved. It Pat's first season, was it?
Yeah, Pat's first season. So I came in with Pat, and we clashed a little bit at the start. I think
he
had certain ways, you know.
He's got his views.
He had certain views, and I had certain views. And, you know, when it came to, like, you know, weight and size and this kind of stuff, I'd gone that gauntlet before with Rob Penny, and I just very kind of knew what worked for me. So
I suppose just to tease that out a little bit, Shawnee, like, you would have come from, like, the Munster style of rugby, and I know Sean Penny was trying to play a bit more of an expansive game. So that should have nearly sedged right well for you going into a Pat Lam style, because I know Pat Lam, in his first year there, he really focused on the skills. He brought in skills coaches and you know, he wanted people walking around with a ball 24/7. So, like, how was that a challenge for you to play in those wide channels, or how did you find that?
I found it okay, because we'd had a sampler of it, as I said, with Rob Penny before. So for me, it wasn't anything new, but at the same time, he would mix and match it a little bit. So there was a chance for me to get involved on the other side. I think the good thing is that they were willing to use, you know, put me in certain situations from a defensive point of view too, which worked for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In terms of off kickoffs and at the tail of lineouts and stuff. So it was, it was the same kind of system, but they put a little bit of a tailored, you know, tweak on it, you know, and you saw that with Downey in the second row, George New, but people like that had specific skills, weren't afraid to.
They were able to play ball. And I mean, it was an incredible journey for Connacht, obviously, that culminated in their Pro 12 victory over Leinster. To kind of go back into kind of your days at Connacht, it was really the start of a change in the province. You know, there was a lot of hard work done that Pat Lam's acknowledged in those first year or two that set the foundations for that success. And I suppose that Heineken Cup campaign of 2013 would have been, like, really when you were really, really coming into form. You'd Saracens, Zebre, and obviously Toulouse, and we'll talk about Toulouse now in a few minutes. But you got a start against Saracens. You were heavily involved in that campaign. What's your memories of it?
Yeah, well, that was really my best form, really, at that level. We played Saracens at home. We ran them close. I want to say it was 1913 or 1915 or something like that. And it was the first time when you kind of got up to that level and felt, okay, yeah, sure, I can, you know, this is doable. We backed that up with a win in Toulouse, and I think we did double over Zebre. That was really where I started to find my form, to be told, and just, again, working closely with the coaches and everything. I think one thing too that is not underestimated is the job that Willie Rouen has done.
Yeah, absolutely.
The CEO, he's really done an excellent job behind the scenes too, and it really all flows as one. You can't, you know, have great on the field and, you know, behind the field. If you just look at the product throughout, both on and off the pitch right now, from where it was, it's unrecognizable. So it's an important thing to kind of log, I think, you know.
And a lovely brand of rugby being played too. So I suppose when you break into that team, it was the likes of Robbie Henshaw, Kieran Marmion, you know, they were quite young back then. But I mean, could you tell there was something a bit special about them back then?
Oh, yeah, no question. I think, when you think about them both, that definitely with Marmion, like his mentality stands out. He's quite a quiet guy. But then you get him on the pitch and he's as hard as they come. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's so wild. And then I think with Robbie, one thing I didn't realize, I'd obviously seen him play, but I didn't realize his combination of just his size and his speed and his footwork. You know what I mean? You're looking at him and you're kind of going, Jesus, he's much bigger up close than you'd think he is. Then also, again, quiet kind of guy, and then you get him on the field and he's barking around. So that was pretty, it was pretty obvious that those guys, you know, those guys were definitely playing at a very high level when you arrived.
And it was a nice mix as well. When you got there, first of all, Nathan White and Craig Clark, you know, two highly experienced fellas. Craig Clark, captain of the Chiefs, won a Super Rugby title. Nathan White had just pushed into the Irish squad. He was a Kiwi, obviously naturalised with Connacht. And, you know, he went on and he was quite a favourite of Smith at the time as well. You know, them lads must have gave you some good experiences as well, working alongside them.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we did a great little click going there between Brett Wilkins and myself and Nathan White, and also, like, you know, the likes of Jay Harris Rice and that, like, we'd a really tight group. And yeah, Craig Clark, I think it's just such a shame we didn't get to play more together, because he was already 6'7" or whatever he was, but he was long 6'7", so he was.
He would have shown a few darts to him nicely,
Green Dakota, yeah, those two guys were great, and they just brought a nice, you know, they brought a nice balance to the squad. But as a squad in general, we were very close. You know, you had Andrew Brown, you had Willie Falloon, you had all these great guys that we spent a ton of time, you know, together when we weren't even playing. We'd go play cards or do whatever during the day. So it was a pretty tight-knit unit, and it wasn't surprising that they went on to have, you know, success in the following year.
And I suppose, to look back in the Connacht time, so what would have been your fondest memories of which matches stand out to you?
Definitely the Saracens, even though we lost, the Saracens game at home was definitely the one where it kind of felt, you know, like we could do a bit of damage here. To lose away, I'd love to say it, but to be honest, I don't really remember a lot of it. I decided to try and take Guthrie Steenkamp one-on-one, you know, off the first kickoff, and was kind of out of position, and he ran straight over the top of me. So
there's some massive names that Toulouse team, like Guy Noves, obviously, is an absolute legend of French rugby. Picamoles, like, you know, Doucetoire, he was in the French captain at the time as well. Jose Gere, like, I mean, it was an absolute, you know, Real Madrid of rugby teams at the time as well. I think you hadn't lost a game in 5 years in the Heineken Cup at home when you went there and put that result up on them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think our game plan was spot on, though. Pat had quite a unique game plan going into that really, one that I hadn't really considered much of before or seen many people try and implement. And it worked a treat. And I think we kind of got off to a good start, and our basics were really good. Our fundamentals were good. And you do those things away from home, you always have a shot. So I think they probably underestimated us, to be told. So yeah. I think we managed to take advantage of that. But they were probably obviously the big ones. You know what I mean? Those ones were pretty good.
And I mean, just when I was doing a little bit of prep there, I found an article, an interview from yourself, I think when you're about 20 years old, when you were in the Munster Academy, and I think you just got your first game, your debut with Glasgow. And, you know, it seemed, what struck me there was that you kind of knew from early doors where you wanted to go with your non-rugby afterwards. I mean, you were in your engineering and construction, but it seemed to be that this, you know, your person that you'd like to sit around the table with, Barack Obama, you know, favorite sport, AFL, you know, or NFL. And you know, it really did seem that, you know, rugby was your career, but you already had your plans for outside of rugby.
Yeah, I think, well, for me, it was like I always kind of kept one eye on it, because, you know, unless you're an absolute surefire lock or somebody with such immense talent that, you know, you're going to get, you know, barring injury, you know, 15 years at the very top of this game, I think you have to kind of keep some sort of an eye on it. I've always had interests outside of the game. You know, I think for me, it worked well to have it. I was lucky too. I had a good agent, and I had, you know, towards the end of my career, a guy called Dunnock Foley got involved with me, and he certainly was the one that made the transition the easiest for me.
Okay.
You know, because he came and he helped me massively, just in terms of trying to, you know, see the wood from the trees a little bit when you retire. Yeah. Because mine was pretty easy, because my knee injury was quite bad, so I kind of knew, you know, early doors that it wasn't going to happen for me.
To talk us through the match that happened, or was it like innocuous, or what, talk us through it a little bit?
So I just came back from my neck injury. I think I was playing my second game. Was feeling great. It started to kind of find my form a little bit after a couple of appearances off the bench. We were playing Edinburgh away. I came on just after half time and was going great. Felt like I was back in it. I was back to normal. I was really feeling good. And we had a scrum on our own line in like the 76th minute. And I hooked the ball and it bounced off our second row's foot and came underneath our tight head. And I foolishly tried to put my leg over across towards underneath our tight head and get it back. And it got stuck.
You weren't doing your yoga at that time.
No, absolutely not. And it got stuck in the turf in the grass, and the scrum collapsed on the right hand side, and the whole right hand side of the scrum went down the top of it. So it was pretty. But to be honest with you, as annoying as you know, as heartbreaking as it was at the time, and going through that whole process, it was actually easier in some ways from talking to other people that have retired, because it was a definitive point.
Yeah.
I rehabbed as hard as I could. I left nothing on the table. I had three operations on it, you know, did everything I could. And then it just came to a point where it wasn't happening. So that makes it easier. It made it easier for me personally, because it was like, okay, that's it. It's done. It was one thing and you know, that happened. And as frustrating as it was timing wise, when things had just started to get going, it kind of did make it easier in some ways to just move on and go do something else.
And Shawnee, having gone through it, and you know the career, like we've a lot of young talent now coming through the club. Thankfully, we've you know Dunnock Byrne in the Connacht Academy now, and he's going really well. You know, what advice would you have now, kind of sitting back now with this experience, for any fellas you know pushing on to try and become a pro? What any nuggets of wisdom for them?
Well, I think look, first and foremost, and everyone's going to tell you this, but like you know, genuine hard work is the main thing, and like. Again, like for me, it was about controlling the things I could control, right? I wasn't a great athlete. I wasn't great at anything like this, but I knew like there's no excuse for not being fit. You know what I mean? Anybody in the world can get fit. You just put your runners on, you go run or you go do whatever you need to do. So things like that are non-negotiable should just be non-negotiable. Yeah. Shouldn't just be a case of, oh, I'm not fit. No, just go get fit. You know what I mean? Or anything like that, like your skills, your throwing, your catching, your passing, like... Anybody can get those. Okay, you might not be the best in the world at it, but you're going to get it to a point with enough practice where you're more than proficient at the professional level. And then I think then the second thing that probably looking back at this to me is that don't make it into something that it's bigger than it is. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's just a game.
Yeah.
It is certainly important. And trying to balance that intensity of like wanting to push on, wanting to be successful, working hard, doing all that. But at the same time, keeping it in perspective and realizing that, you know, it's just a game, you know what I mean? And you do it because you enjoy it. That's the hardest thing for me, is was always trying to line them two up, you know.
Okay, good stuff. So look, I mean, thanks for your time. I said I'd take you just for 30 minutes. I'm just trying to think of any other parting quips for you, but I think one of the other feedback I got from David Kilcoyne was, and I said, you know, what stands out for me about Shawnee Henry looking back, like, and he goes, well, I think Shawnee, fashion-wise, it was a big influence for me. I think you're... one of the first men out there to start wearing suit jackets, and David Kilcoyne said it really struck for him that you raised that standard in the dressing room in terms of the fashion sense. So I mean, how are you dressing these days?
Not too bad. Suit jackets are still pretty prevalent, truth be told. I think the early suit jacket days was to probably try and hide the bit of excess timber I was carrying. probably a fair description, but no, they're still there. They're still, I haven't gone full American style just yet. Still keeping with the old you know, the old boot cut jeans and the shoes.
And I do look at your Instagram from time to time, and you have some fantastic sights and sceneries and matches you're getting to. And you know, what's the future hold? Is the States home for now, or are there any plans to move home?
I don't know, truth be told. I honestly don't know the answer to it. Think about it every now and then. I think, you know, career wise, this country's been really good to me since I retired. And I think the opportunities here are amazing, and you know, I'm very lucky. I really enjoy the career I'm in right now, and I really enjoy, you know, my job and everything else. So I do think someday there might be the ability to go between both, and I think that's probably what I'd look to do. But right now it's just about keeping focused on what I'm kind of at the meantime, and seeing how that all unfolds over the next while. But Yeah, it would be nice to be able to spend, have an excuse to spend more time at home, you know, because
good stuff. And I suppose you're checking in at home, seeing how are the crew, are they around the Howley's area, how they're keeping.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a while actually since I've been back at Howley's, but I tell you, I wouldn't mind going back in for a...
We always try to, since they're under 18 days, it wasn't any earlier than that, we always used to like stopping in Howley's on the way home, and that's a great tradition that our supporters have kept up, and we try to pop in there as much as possible. And I suppose you always support the local football team, Raffles, out in your area, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Tom would always definitely be delighted to see you coming in. I know he always speaks highly of you. He always lets me know every time I come in. So, yeah, I'm sure he's appreciative of it.
Anyway, Shawnee, listen, look, it's been fantastic to catch up with you. We'll chat a little bit more offline after this. But thanks a million for your time, and all the best, okay?
Legend. Thanks, Ross.
Thank you, Shawnee. Okay, good man.
I'm going back to where the beach is near, the beer is dear, there's plenty of women out in the crowd. Walking around the final second,
the whistle is gone, and Sligo Rovers at your back.
By the riverside, you can watch the tide as it flows.
Well, I'm being told that Average Joe's does not have enough players and will be forfeiting the championship match.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Get a guy to enterprise and clean out over the fence. Oh, he's a Cotton. Jesus,
in the bookie shop, I done.